Hello, this is Dr. Shiva. Welcome to our podcast, Get Educated or Be Enslaved.
Episode 1554, air date May 23rd, 2025.
All right, good evening, everyone. This is Dr. Shiva Idre. Today's discussion in our town hall is going to be how Trump exploits white people and the truth about South Africa. So we can go to video, Suresh. So that's what we're going to talk about. If you notice, there's been a lot of stuff that's been going on, and the left has been getting perturbed at Trump, and it's getting actually very confusing for people to understand what's going on. So I want to use the recent set of events that just took place over the last 24 hours to really give you a systems perspective on how racism is actually used to divide working people. But more specifically, how the white working class in the United States is actually being exploited by Trump. Now, typically what happens, the left will attack Trump from the left saying he's a racist. And we have to define actually what racism is, which I've done in previous videos, but racism is really using race for consolidating power, profit, and control. And any race can do that. Elizabeth Warren, as I've shared, is a racist. She used race to advance herself politically by claiming that she is a Native American when she wasn't. But blacks use division among blacks and whites to consolidate power. Indians politicians do it, white politicians do it. So we have a much more systems definition of racism. Racism is really a pillar of large-scale exploitation of imperialism. So that's what racism really is. Racism is not the end unto itself. It is a very powerful weapon that can be used to divide up working people so we don't, as Nicholas just alluded to, so we don't build a bottoms-up movement. And this can occur locally within a nation, but it can also occur across borders. So that's what we're going to talk about today. To those of you who are not in our town hall, you can see we do these town halls every Thursdays at 11 a.m. and 8 p.m. Suresh will put up a link for those of you who are listening on social media, how you can come to our future town halls. You can go to vashiva.com/orientation. And all of you should come, because when you come to the town halls, you get to participate. You get to be part of this global movement for truth, freedom, health. The movement for truth, freedom, health is the only force on this planet, which is teaching working people critical thinking using systems thinking. We're the only force that also offers real solutions that are bottoms-up solutions without relying on government or big government or big corporations or big academia. And these are solutions that are built up bottoms-up by the people, and I'll come back to those solutions. But one of the most important things that we educate people in our movement is to think critically. And in the modern world, the way you learn how to think critically is through a systems approach. So if you go to truthfreedomhealth.com, we provide this curriculum, which took me many, many years to develop. I used to teach it at MIT, which teaches you how to empower yourself through critical thinking to change yourself from the health standpoint in all different ways, internally and externally. So critical thinking is what's necessary so working people do not get exploited. So the reason I wanted to do this talk is about 24 to 48 hours ago, this stuff was going viral all over social media and even on mainstream media, that Trump had the president of South Africa at the White House. And first of all, the current black leadership that runs South Africa is basically the black bourgeois of South Africa. They have not, in fact, addressed the fundamental issues of exploitation in South Africa. If anything, what they've done was to make sure that a real revolution did not take place in South Africa. So just to give you the background on, and I'll come back to the history, but fundamentally in this White House meeting that took place, obviously Cyril Ramaphosa, who's the prime minister of South Africa, or president, had come Trump basically said, oh, you know, you're committing genocide against the white farmers in South Africa. And he dims out the lights in the White House and he proceeds to play a video of one of the parties in South Africa, one of the left parties, which is saying that, you know, we should kill all the white people. Okay. So based on that, Trump said, oh, we have evidence now white farmers are being committed genocide. All right. So this, the reaction to that is what's interesting. So all the MAGA-tards are like, oh my God, Trump is protecting white people now. Okay. He's a great white hope protecting white people. The left obviously started calling Trump a racist, saying, hey, look, you know, the realities, apartheid, which we'll talk about for those of you who don't know what apartheid was a systemic form of institutionalized racism where 3% of the white population of South Africa for hundreds of years were subjugating the other 97%. And this is a reality. But the left started calling Trump a racist. You see? I wanted to take a different approach because I didn't want to get caught into this left-right narrative. I wanted all of you and the world to really get a much more systems perspective on what's taking place. So to understand this, we're going to sort of triangulate this or in a bunch of ways. So first of all, let's understand the history of South Africa. For those of you who don't know, South Africa, there were two parts of Africa in the advance of colonialism, which were extremely important for exploitation. One was Egypt and the other was South Africa. Okay. In other parts of the world, India was a very big area for exploitation and colonialism and other parts of Europe, for example. But in Africa, South Africa and Egypt were the points of target, not to say there weren't other places. One of the leaders of leading the theoretical leader and a guy who made a lot of money off this was a guy called Cecil Rhodes. Some of you may have heard of Rhodesia, okay? It's named the Rhodes Scholarship, based out of Oxford. You may know of this, but that's named after Cecil Rhodes. What's also important to understand is the link to Zionism and Cecil Rhodes. Zionism, as I've talked about before, was a political ideology, made up by a guy called Theodor Herzl, which brought in all sorts of religious elements, but it's a political ideology which basically said a small set of people are better than everyone else. As I've talked about, no different than the caste system of India or Nazism. But Cecil Rhodes had to convince Jews in Europe that they needed to leave Europe and they needed to go to their homeland. So, and in order to do that, Zionism, created by Cecil Rhodes, needed anti-Semitism to convince Jewish people to leave, for example, Germany. You have to understand the white Jewish Jews who were in Europe were fundamentally Europeans. When Hitler came to power, many Jewish leaders wanted to stay in Germany and fight Hitler. And there were interesting class differences between the working class Jews and the elite Jews. The elite Jews funded Theodor Herzl, and they actually collaborated with the Nazis. But fundamentally, there was a working class movement coming up in Germany, and many of the intellectual Jews were trade union leaders who wanted to fight Hitler. But Zionism did not want this legitimate fight, and they actually promoted anti-Semitism. And there's a number of videos I've talked about that. But nonetheless, Zionism got its start, got its funding from the biggest racists in the world, one of them being Cecil Rhodes. Cecil Rhodes funded Theodor Herzl, okay, the founder of Zionism. Cecil Rhodes was also the biggest exploiter of Africa. But again, wherever Britain went, be it India, be it Africa, they practiced a model called divide and rule. So when Britain first came into Africa, they basically got all these major chieftains of tribes fighting against each other. They would arbitrarily draw random. They basically took Africa and they started using they took the continent of Africa and randomly drew lines to divide new borders. And they had these tribes starting to fight each other. So first they had all these tribes starting to fight each other. They also had the Afrikaners, the Boers, also fighting the Black Africans. But a lot of this got accentuated once they found massive amount of diamonds in South Africa. And I'm not going to go into all details of this history, but British imperialism and the Boer elites created an unholy alliance to essentially practice this divide and rule policy. That divide and rule policy ultimately created institutionalized racism throughout South Africa. And they tiered it. So in this racism model, the whites were on top, then Indians. A lot of Indians had moved to South Africa, believe it or not. They were at second. Then the coloreds, which are people who are mixed races, and the blacks were at the bottom, okay? So they divided everyone up. By the way, this is no different than what the British colonialists did in the Americas when they first came. They had the black slaves divided up with the white settlers, divided up with the Native Americans. So you have to understand that racism is a pillar of imperialism or colonialism, okay? Colonialism cannot survive without having divisions among working people. Imperialism cannot survive without having these divisions. And the reason I'm telling you this is that this is not just, it just happens, it is actually engineered. So you engineer racism to divide people up so we don't unite against our common exploiter. And it's very, very well organized. The academics at places like Harvard, Oxford, learn how to do this. They have a science. Policy is created to divide people up, and it's still occurring today. So, and Trump is part of that, okay? What you just happened, Obama is part of that. The Clintons all part of this. All the elites, black and white, engineer racism to divide up the working class. So in South Africa, they actually created a very tiered system. So a lot of Africans hate Indians. The coloreds hate the Africans, the coloreds hate India, and everyone hates each other. So you never can mobilize people bottoms up. So you have to wonder, why is it that 97% of blacks in South Africa never fully mobilized against the 3% whites? Because among the blacks, they further divided people up by tribal distinctions, okay? And they would make one tribe feel better than the other tribe, okay? And so this is what's been going on. So in the 1980s, the apartheid movement got a lot more publicity, particularly because students in the United States on college campuses started protesting at the fact that their universities had hundreds of millions of dollars of investment in South Africa. MIT, I think when I was a student in the 80s, had, I think, about a $20 billion endowment, and a portion of that was being invested in South Africa, same with Harvard. And the universities justified these investments by saying, oh, we're helping the blacks there. If we didn't invest, no one else would. And these investments were done, you know, in exploitative ventures like large-scale diamond mines, et cetera. So a movement arose, a bottoms-up movement across the United States to by students demanding that colleges divest. It was called the divestment movement, okay? When those movements came up, they had different trends. Some elements of the student population said, oh, we're helping the Africans. Let's not divest. Another group of one trend said, it was more bleeding heart liberal saying, oh, we should stop the funding of these endowments should not be supporting South Africa, right? But there was not really a revolutionary trend until we created that at MIT. This is the 1980s. We said, okay, it's nice to talk about the black workers being exploited in South Africa, but why don't we talk about working people here in the United States being exploited? So the movement at MIT, when it arose, was a very revolutionary movement. We said, yes, it's important that we talk about the fact that MIT as an institution is exploiting black workers, but let's also talk about how the poor white workers and the poor black workers are being exploited right here on campus. So we connected both. It was quite revolutionary. We led some of the biggest protests. There's a picture of me burning the South African flag on the steps of MIT, you guys can find. And the directionality, this is back, I think it was 19 or 18 or 19, that we gave was beyond left or right. and saying that working people, whether you're in South Africa or here, should unite. It's a very different philosophy because, see, white liberal students were very nice, were happy talking about exploitation in South Africa because it was sort of the in thing to do. But those same liberal white students would be afraid to go to places like Dorchester or Roxbury right here in Boston, which are predominantly their segregation, even in Massachusetts. Okay. So we wanted to expose that level of hypocrisy among the liberal white elite students. And we were very, very successful. But the reason I give you that background was, so in the 80s, there was this huge surge of consciousness in understanding South Africa. There were used to be huge protests in Harvard Square. But anyway, I remember in about 85, I met a, and by the way, in South Africa, as these movements are rising up, and you can read about it, you wouldn't, nearly every day you'd hear about black students being shot by, you know, mowed down because they were also protesting. Miners, a trade union, black miners were rising up. You have to understand 97% of people subjugated by 3% set of people. By the way, all these divisions were set in place by British colonialism. So it was a quite a very, very interesting time, the 80s, because you couldn't pick up the paper that's seeing students being mowed down in South Africa for protesting or miners, trade unions coming up. And so we in the United States students supported these fights for liberation. Some of you may have heard of a guy called Steve Biko, B-I-K-O. Steve Biko was a student organizer in South Africa who was also gunned down by, the South African forces. Also, let me remind everyone, the South African government and Israel were very, very close. And there was enough data at that time to show that South Africa and Israel had built nuclear weapons together, okay? Much of it hidden by, not talked about by the mainstream media in the United States, but South Africa and Israel had very close and still do have very close relationships, or definitely at that time, the IDF. So South Africa was a boiling point at that time. And within South Africa, there were different trends on how you ended this exploitation. The African National Congress, the ANC, was an organization which wasn't just one organization, it was an organization within organizations, which means there were many different trends within that. Far left trends, you know, not so left trends, et cetera. Nelson Mandela, at that time, he had been in prison for conducting some terrorist activities to blow up, some of the South African government-related institutions. I was in Harvard Square one day, and I met a guy who was in a different organization called Abduza, and he had just been let out of prison, so he was here. But he said in prison, there were many different South African leaders who were jailed by the South African government. And apparently in prison, they would have very, very interesting discussions on how to move the movement forward. Like we talk about in Truth, Freedom, Health, right? You have the left wing, the right wing. But he said there was this guy, Mandela, he remembers, in prison. And he said he was one of the dumbest people in prison. He wasn't really respected even by the other African leadership in different trends. He was seen as sort of dumb, okay? Not that thinking. He was just sort of there. And at the height of the South African or the anti-apartheid movement, there were elements of the African National Congress armies, which was actually marching into Johannesburg, and there was going to be a serious revolution. The net of it is, out of nowhere, Mandela comes up, supported by the white apartheid regime, and he is anointed as a leader. Okay, boom. Overnight, Mandela is made a black face in high place to sort of appease people. And if you look at what happened after Mandela, Mandela brought in a guy called Zuma, another the black president who was completely corrupt. Mandela's wife, Winnie Mandela, was a complete nut job. Okay. So basically, the swarm put in Mandela to appease the masses, to stave off what would have been a true revolutionary movement to really address the real inequities. And still to this day, the fundamental inequities have not been addressed. You basically brought in the Black bourgeois who collaborated with the remnants of the colonialist elites. And fundamentally, South Africa is not in any better situation than it was, except you have Black faces in high places, as has happened. So that's the situation in South Africa. So there have been some elements in South Africa which want to address the real fundamental inequities, which were never, frankly, addressed by Mandela. And remember, as we've talked about, the elites are very, very clever at using this technique. When a real movement comes bottoms up, they will anoint who they want, and they'll make them martyrs and heroes or whatever, like Gandhi in India or Martin Luther King in the United States and Mandela in South Africa. So anyway, the fundamental issues have not been addressed, except some grandstanding by Black leaders to appease the Black masses. So Cyril Ramaphosa is one of those people. And so when he came to the White House, Trump used the occasion to bring up this video of a far left Black leader saying we should kill all white people. And then Trump went on some tirade saying the whites are being committed genocide. White farmers are being killed in genocide. Now, genocide is a pretty powerful term. Now, you have to understand what's the reality of what's actually been going on. The real genocide has been in Palestine, right? Trump has never played a video in the White House of Palestinians being butchered. But he plays some video of some guy all pissed off with the whites and then says, oh, these are grave sites of where white farmers have been killed, right? None of it can be substantiated. But here's the reality. In 2019, about 516 white farmers were murdered or attacked, okay, out of which 10% were actually murdered. 2019 is when Trump was in power, okay? And that was a time when the most number of attacks took place to white farmers. In fact, today it's been 50% of that. So the question you have to ask is, Trump cares so much for the white farmers of South Africa, why didn't he say anything in 2019 when he was in power, right? So the issue is, does he even care about the white people, quote unquote, genocide in South Africa? And the answer is absolutely no. Trump was grandstanding. Why? Because out of massive pressure of the South African people in South Africa, the South African government filed a lawsuit in the International Court of Justice against Israel for genocide. And the United States was very much against this. Israel was against this. So Trump's masters, the Zionist masters, essentially asked him to, as Trump is a great con man creating theater, to talk about white farmers' genocide, but never talking about Palestinian genocide. And that's what the last 24 hours is up. But as you really start analyzing this, you start recognizing that the role of Trump is to act like he's for white people. So if you saw social media, all the MAGAtards are, oh yeah, I'm like poor, white people are being attacked. Trump is our great white hope. He's saving white people from genocide. Okay. But the reality is this, right? Those of us who've studied a little bit of history, we know that the white working class in the United States is one of the most exploited group of people by the white elites and the Black bourgeois in the United States. And why do I say that? If you look at the median income of Blacks and Hispanics, I believe it's around 15 to 20K. The median income of whites was around, I think, 37K, but it too has dropped over the last 20 years, all right? So the white working class is actually not doing that well, in spite of all the rhetoric of supposedly wanting to save white people. But during the Obama administration, nearly 57% of the same people voted for Trump voted for Obama, thinking he was going to be the hope, their fighter. And everyone knows what happened in 2008. Obama, as predicted, saved all the big banks. He capitulated to them, bailed them all out. So the white working class in the United States once again felt betrayed. So Trump was created to give them hope. And the hope that he gave them was MAGA, M-A-G-A. And MAGA was really to make sure that the white working class, which is a predominant working class in the United States, would not organize a bottoms-up movement. Because the history of the white working class in the United States is one of flexing its muscle and fighting for its interests. As Nicholas said, going back to the 1800s, early 1900s, the American white working class men and women have had a rich history of bottoms-up movements in collaboration with other racial groups. And this history must be destroyed, must be wiped out. So Trump was brought in to promote this concept as he's a great white hope. Well, what did he actually do between 2016 to 2020? A, as I mentioned, in 2019 is when there were more white farmers. By the way, it's a very small number being supposedly attacked by blacks. He didn't stand up for them in 2019, but today he is. But nonetheless, if you look at what actually happened during 2016 to 2020, particularly during the pandemic, $2.3 trillion of wealth transfer took place to 600 billionaires. 600 billionaires increased their wealth by $2.3 billion. And ironically, not ironically, but it makes sense, the South African Elon Musk increased his wealth from $20 billion to $200 billion during this time. While the American white working class was suffering, the 600 elite billionaires increased their wealth by $2.3 trillion under Trump. Trump exploits white people. That's what he's in there. Trump exploits white people to make them think he is their hope to fight their exploitation, which has been taking place, frankly, over a significant amount of time. Yes, there has been exploitation of all other races, but the white working class, if you look at it, has suffered significantly in the United States. And Trump, the role of Trump is to exploit the anger and to divert that anger not to the elites, but divert it to immigrants, the brown people over here, or divert it to black people over here. And that's the role of Trump. No different than what the British did in Africa, India, including the white settlers. You see, that's what Trump is doing. He's playing the same old divide and rule game. And it's occurring right now. And by the way, I don't know if you guys know the breaking news that just came out about 6 hours ago is, and by the way, I don't give a fuck about Harvard, and this is what's really fascinating. The United States government has revoked student exchange into Harvard, which means no students who are foreign origin can attend Harvard anymore. In fact, they have to change their enrollment to other universities. And the reason was Harvard was unwilling to give surveillance videos of those protesters who were anti-Zionist protesters. So Kristi Noem, the DHS, removed their rights to do a student exchange. So this is quite interesting. But here's the interesting thing, just as an aside, and I think it was done to Harvard because most people don't give a fuck about Harvard, right? Most of us don't really like Harvard. So when you remove something away from Harvard, people say, oh yeah, that's a good thing. But nonetheless, it's pretty much abhorrent because it's a serious violation against free speech. But when you do it to Harvard, people are okay with it in some sense because we don't have a lot of sympathy for Harvard, but it has far-reaching implications for the United States, you know, academic institutions. But anyway, the reality is there's been serious genocide in Palestine. And to talk about white farmers being committed genocide is at minimum a distraction, but more importantly, it is using race to exploit white people. So they feel like Trump is their savior. Meanwhile, they're getting screwed big time. And this dynamic needs to really be understood, the level of theatrics that's taking place and the level of manipulation of the white working class in the United States that's taking place. And all of this is being done at a time when infinite consolidation of power is taking place right now. Some of you may know that the amount of cash that people like, let's say Warren Buffett, Bill Ackman, there's a shitload of cash sitting on the sidelines because people know there's gonna be a significant downturn. We're sort of in the seventh inning of a big major cycle. It's still a bear market. I mean, a bull market, but there's going to be a downturn. So a lot of people are waiting with cash to go buy when the stocks dip. And working people who don't understand these dynamics are the ones that are going to get screwed. Again, most of the white working class. So when you put this together, if you're white and you think Trump is fighting for white people, that's what they want you to think. But what Trump is actually fighting for is the elites, black, white, brown, yellow, all the elites, to make sure they can consolidate power. And white people are actually being exploited and used to act as though that he is going to take care of you, that we don't need to build a bottoms-up movement because the majority of the working class in the United States is white. And you have to manipulate them to think that the great white hope, Trump, is fighting for you. It's so far from the truth. When you look at what occurred during the pandemic, when you look at what's occurring right now. So I wanted to give this analysis because it looks like every week the Zionists who occupied the United States have one theatric after another theatric. Last week, the theater was a three-part theater, which all the mainstream media was part of, including the Zionist New York Times. And that theater went like this. If you saw the news about 2 weeks ago, oh my God, Netanyahu and Trump are fighting each other. They don't like each other. I remember this. And you have to be a fucking moron to think Trump and Netanyahu are opposite sides. But remember, Mossad's slogan is, thou shalt, you know, through deception, thou shalt do war. So they did a three-part deception, what I call three elements of this grand deception. The news media all put out this news, Trump and Netanyahu are at loggerheads. While they're saying that, Trump is out in the Middle East consolidating the biggest thugs of the Middle East, all the Zionist Muslims. Yes, Zionist Muslims. You don't have to be Jewish to be a Zionist. You know, the thug in Saudi Arabia, the thug in the UAE, Qatar, all of these people. And Qatar openly gives Trump an airplane, right? By the way, which they weren't able to sell, so they gave it to him. So all of the Zionist Muslims, Trump was organizing, consolidating them for greater Israel, while Netanyahu is moving even more devastatingly, you know, essentially starving children, women and children in Gaza, right? So it's a three-part strategy. You tell the public Netanyahu and Trump are fighting each other, but the reality is Trump is consolidating the Zionist Muslims in the Middle East for greater Israel, while Netanyahu is going and devastating Gaza even more. So this is a level of deception that's taking place. But if you have a systems perspective, and as Nicholas shared, and you keep the eye on the prize, which is they do not want working people to build a bottoms-up movement, to shatter the swarm. Once you understand that concept, they don't want us to build bottoms-up self-organizing system. Then it becomes easy to understand stuff. But if you don't have that core sort of gravitational understanding, like first principles, you're always going to think something's happening, that you're going to get lost in the theater. So we have the theater, what took place 2 weeks ago. Now we have the current theater, and there will be more theaters like this. But all of this theatrics is, you know, over here, you're showing, you know, some shiny object to the monkeys. And over here, you're actually you're carrying the will of your masters. And that's what Trump is doing. And he's doing it very cleverly. However, because our movement exists, we influence a lot of people who know that we've always told the truth at the right time with a explicit purpose of mobilizing people into action. And that's what we're doing here. That's where we host these Thursday 11 a.m. and 8 p.m. orientations. It's to mobilize people, is to bring people together, to build community bottoms up. And the other principle that we want to educate people on is that one person who can understand this concept, systems thinking, which is what we teach at Truth Freedom Health, one person who can understand the depth of it, one person who can articulate it. You know, Nick, it's very fascinating watching Nicholas's progress. You know, he did a great thing really explaining this. And we as a movement are now bringing up leaders, so it's not dependent on me. So others can educate others. independent of me. And that will become a scalable movement because it cannot be dependent on one person. My job was and is, my mission was to organize a curriculum, bring people together, but more importantly, to enable leaders to emerge so they can organize independent of me. And that's very, very exciting to see that occurring. So this movement begins with truth, freedom, health. It begins with enabling you to be a critical thinker through systems thinking. Systems thinking is a very powerful way of thinking using control systems principles. That is what the elites learn. And if we don't learn it, you're going to be a lost puppy. You will not get it. You have to let go of your ego if you truly want to change the world and learn the stuff. Or you can spend 30 years of your life doing it elsewhere. The good thing is we've organized the curriculum, made it accessible for you. But that's the core. Around that core, which we use to, you know, to the analysis of the thousands of videos that I've done for you guys. You guys can use that in many, many different areas. We're using that to educate people in our Truth for Health Warrior program. But in 2025, we're using that core thinking to also deliver tangible solutions, which we've also had for 16, 20 years. And Suresh will bring up one of those solutions is educating people about using systems thinking to deliver healthcare, health education to be specific. Tomorrow morning, I'll be getting up pretty early because it's the start of our 3-day series. Suresh, can you bring that up? Systemshealth.com. And maybe Nicholas, you can put people up where to do it. But if you can zoom in a little bit, but tomorrow we have a 3-day symposium, which is part of our Systems Health. This is a institute we've created. If any one of you wants to help yourself, your family, and others really understand health, what's the right things for you? You see, there's billions of videos out there about eat this, don't eat this. But in the midst of all this information about health, diabetes is going to double. More people are anxious and depressed. It's not like information is helping people. Why? Because people don't have a framework, a scientific way to understand what's right for them. That curriculum is what I created back in 2010 by integrating engineering system science with traditional systems of medicine. And as Suresh scrolls down here, you'll see that this educational program has different certification programs. But for example, tomorrow I'll be teaching a course on systems anatomy. I will teach you the anatomy of a body, but a completely different way. Day two, we teach people how their body is a system. We help people figure out what kind of system they are and what's the right food supplements for them. But we give you the framework so you can do it for yourself and others. And you scroll down, we have these different certification programs where you can become a systems health educator. Stop right there, sir. It's a master's program. So this is a tangible solution. And our goal is to have an army of systems health educators to educate people how to really understand their body as a system. So that's one solution that comes from the same systems thinking. So you can learn how to educate yourself and others to figure out what's the right medicine for the right person at the right time. These are foundational principles. What foods, how do you figure out what food is right? Is the food clean? Well, starting in 2013, as Suresh will show this other website, the Clean Food Certified is a international standard. It is a framework created again by we the people, where we are helping restaurants, manufacturers, individuals understand what is clean food from the sourcing of the food, the ingredients in the food, the bioavailability and nutrient density. Far more expansive than the USDA organic, but we the people own this, and you all of you can get involved in becoming ambassadors of clean food to go help in your own communities. And then the last thing is, if we go to the Open Science Institute, over 35 diseases, we have our own, you know, rocket science scientific institution. If Suresh goes into osteoarthritis, we are going after solving every major disease on the planet faster, cheaper, and safer. For example, with osteoarthritis, as Suresh scrolls down, you'll see that we've made significant progress right there, Suresh, if you can hold. We went through all the literature and we mapped out every chemical reaction that's involved in osteoarthritis. That's called the systems architecture. We published it. We gave it away to the public. Then we mathematically computed all those chemical reactions without killing animals. And then we used that to actually screen the compounds from nature. We discovered some very powerful compounds, which we've now manufactured. But this is the reason I want to share this to you, not about promoting a product, but to show you that we have a paradigm from going N10 as Suresh scrolls down. The first part of the systems architecture, we give this away to the public. Go down. You can donate to supporting further research. Suresh, click on that image right there. And what you'll see is that we have actually, click on that image right there, Suresh, and click on that. Yep. And if you go down here, we have open sourced this. And Suresh, if you scroll down and bring that image up. And so right there, click on cartilage. So we're looking at, and click on chondrocytes. So this is all our research that we've made publicly accessible. Click on ligands and click on cytokines. So we're looking at every cytokine in the knee. Click on IL-1 beta on top, Suresh, that one right there. And we've mapped out every chemical reaction. And Suresh, if you put your key, the link a little bit above straight up, you'll see MMPP13 go up. Just scroll, keep going straight up to the right a little bit. To the right. Yeah, right there. Click on that. And we have mapped out and click on catabolic effect. MMPP13 is a molecule that your body will upregulate. And if you click on catabolic effect, if you're undergoing cartilage degeneration, click on any one of those red lines, Suresh, and you'll see we've mapped out every chemical reaction in the article which it comes from. This was a Herculean effort that our movement did through the Cytosoft technology and the Open Science Institute. Go back, Suresh. So that's what's called the systems architecture. And go back, Suresh, go back to the page. Yeah. And Suresh, click on osteoarthritis again. And so we do the systems architecture. Go down, Suresh. Keep going down. After we do this architecture, then we publish it like we just showed you. Okay. We give it away to the public. And then scroll down, Suresh. Keep going down. And then we use that architecture to model. And we discover two very interesting compounds from chamomile and bitter orange. And then we actually gave away those results. Go down, Suresh. We have shown how when you combine these ingredients in synergy, you get a rapid lowering right there of inflammation. And keep going down. So this is what we've done. Suresh, go back. So we're doing this across it's a new paradigm in science. ALS, leukemia, periodontitis. And all of this is being done faster, cheaper, and safer than the existing way science is being done. So think about that. We have our own research institution, our movement. We're going after diseases. We're going to find compounds from nature, independent of the NIH, independent of big pharma, independent of big academia and big corporations. Quite revolutionary. Thanks, Suresh. Go back. So, and thanks, Suresh. You can go back to video. The reason I'm sharing this with you is that all of these solutions, be it clean food certified or systems health, you can go back to video, Suresh, you can stop sharing, is all coming from the same root. And that root, you can stop sharing this, Suresh. Suresh, you can stop sharing this. Yeah. No, you can just come back to video. Yeah. Can you just go back to video? Yeah. So all of this, I think you just want to bring the spotlight on the video, Suresh. So all of this is coming, is coming from the same pillar of systems thinking. We're using systems thinking to define food. We're using systems thinking for health education. We're using systems thinking at the molecular level, and we're using systems thinking for critical thinking. And this is why when Trump goes off acting like he's for white people, you have to use your brain. Does this guy care for white people, the white working class? No, he doesn't. Because during the pandemic, the white working class was the one that was the most exploited. And during the pandemic, 600 elites made $2.3 trillion. And right now, it's not like he cares about the white people in the United States, that he's fighting for them. He is run by Zionism. He is owned by his Zionist masters. His job is to ensure that Zionism continues to occupy the United States. And his job is to make sure greater Israel is created. And for that, him and his family are going to profit immensely. The only force against this is critical thinking. One Nicholas Lupo who understands this is powerful. One Ryan Shea in Texas who understands this is powerful. But you got to put in the time to understand these concepts. And then you got to put in the time to understand how to articulate it to other people. Our job is to create 100 or 1,000 Malcolm X's, 100 or 1,000, you know, leaders. And the, at a very deep level that they're able to understand system science, educate people. And most importantly, remember, our movement is by the people, for the people. Everyone in our movement, you know, has worked bottoms up. They're do everyday activities to support themselves and their families. They're entrepreneurs. They've created stuff. They're not exploiters. This is the only movement on the face of this planet which will always tell the truth at the right time, is by the people, for the people, has an educational curriculum, and has real rocket science 23rd century solutions that's not being delivered top down, but bottoms up. There's nothing like this out there. So you don't have any more excuses, unfortunately, to simply whine all day and not get involved. So if you're new, go to truthfreedomhealth.com. If you're listening, become a member, watch the Shatter the Swarm video, go to Get Off the Plantation, get involved. And we have leaders on this call that you can connect with, and they'll support you in your local communities. They do weekly meetings, they do once a month meetups. So we've created this global community. But when it comes to Trump, understand that he's been anointed by Zionism to make sure that the white working class in the United States, which is a powerful working class, remains quiet, does not mobilize itself, and gets distracted by thinking everyone else is their enemy except the elites, the swarm. And I hope that's clear when you really look at what occurred in the last 24 hours. Thank you. We'll take questions on this topic so people understand the dynamics of what's going on. So if you have a question, here's the rules. In the chat, write your question to me or to Nicholas, and Nicholas will give them to me. And then that way it gives me a chance to absorb. It also gives you a chance to be a little more thoughtful, because when you write, you have to think a little more. And then I'll select a question. And if it makes sense, I'll answer the question, or I may interact with whoever put forward the question. So questions. And Suresh, if you're seeing stuff on social media, please put the questions up on the chat so I can look at them. So again, I want to welcome everyone for coming. Get involved. We're building solutions bottoms up. As people are putting together any questions, I was on a Twitter space and some guy comes on and, you know, he starts saying, oh, you can't do anything. You know, we live in a dystopian world, etc. There's a lot of people are talking truth, but they'll never give any solutions. Their solution is to say, you can't do anything. The problems are too hard. That's nonsense. Human beings are very resourceful. We're very innovative. We're very, very creative. I have great hope for all of us, as long as we recognize that it's about learning the dynamics of how the exploitation takes place, learning that we have to build a bottoms-up movement, and learning what happens when people build community. It's extraordinary what's possible. So we're living in a very, very awesome time because our movement has exposed the left and the right, the obvious and the not so obvious establishment. And that's why that Shatter the Swarm video is such a powerful video, because it lays it bare. Questions?
Arturo Perales has a...
Yeah, can you just put it? Can you just put it right up in my thing, Nicholas?
I'll do that.
Yeah, just put it here so I can read and then... So if any of the other leaders are getting questions, this, you know, chat it right to me, Nicholas. It'll come up in my chat window. Did you drop it in? Okay. Have you read the book, The Pedagogy of the Oppressed? Cultural invasion is affecting us. That's why people like Trump for the hope of cultural synthesis. cultural invasion is affecting us, and that's why people, that's why people like Trump. Well, what's actually happening is, first of all, let's look, 23% of the United States public voted for Trump. Okay, when you actually look at it, if you actually break down the numbers, there are a significant set of the American people who still don't vote. They've checked, they don't even register to vote. So we have to look at this actually factually. The reality is that there's incredible amount of brainwashing and through the media that takes place, not only through the mainstream media. They've actually become small compared to the social media. The social media may seem like it's social media, but it's actually one of the even more potent consolidated systems of propaganda right now, because who gets promoted on social media is determined by the swarm. So this concept of dividing and ruling the working class in the United States is being done in a very, very organized fashion. So it's not like people like Trump. What it is Trump is being shoved down people's throats. So it's very easy to think people like Trump, or they liked whoever was in power, they liked Obama. These are characters, Arturo. They are created. So if you look at Trump, the guy that created Trump was a guy called Wilbur Ross, is the one who really identified him. Are you familiar with who he is? Wilbur Ross was a former head of commerce, Secretary of Commerce under Trump. Wilbur Ross is a guy who bailed out Trump out of his last bankruptcy in the casinos. And in Trump, they identified a con man. And Trump was put on the trajectory in the Farm League to become president, because they knew they could use him as a wonderful agent of Zionism. So these guys are manufactured. They are promoted. They are organized. So again, this is hard for good people to believe because of a certain level of innocence and naivete. These people are manufactured. They're created. They're promoted. And they create these fake dialectics of the left and the right. But Trump is created just like Obama was created. Okay. So understand that. It is not like there's some complex phenomenon taking place here. It's actually pretty straightforward. We are looking at infinite consolidation of power, power, profit, and control, and Trump is an agent of that. And look at what the New York Times did. The New York Times acts like his enemy, but ultimately the New York Times promoted this myth that him and Netanyahu are on the outs. Even Harvard acts like they're in opposition to him, but even the Harvard president wants to end, you know, is conflating on anti-Zionism, anti-Semitism. The cleverness of fake opposition and creating these dialectics is what's actually going on. Next one says, Britt Lindgren says, what can the South African farmers do to protect themselves from the violence perpetrated against them by the black population? Well, how many, have you looked at the actual data? Britt, first of all, let's put all of this in context, okay? You have to put this in context. I haven't seen a video of Trump talking about the abuse of the black South Africans that took place. Has anyone seen that for the last 50, 60, 100 years? Has anyone? So there have been, even in the White House, a South African farmer was there. He goes, there's no genocide of South African farmers. There have been anger and there have been criminal activities. If you go to my, Suresh, can you bring up my Twitter feed? So this is what we need to understand. In 2019, the number of white South African farmers that were affected, I actually have the data that I posted. Can you bring it up? Suresh, can you just go to my Twitter feed? So so if you go, there we go. I put out this Twitter feed. I said, dear Donald Trump, in 2019, when you were president, attacks on white South African farmers were at their highest. You were absolutely silent then on quote unquote genocide. It's disgusting to call it genocide, guys. Come on, of white South African farmers. you don't give a fuck about white people, be it in South Africa or America. I said, you're a Zionist cocksucker. And since South Africa and Israel, since South Africa sued Israel for actual genocide of Palestinians in the ICJ, your Zionist masters ordered you to talk about quote unquote genocide of whites in South Africa. You were groomed by the Zionists to be president since Wilbur Ross identified you as a consummate con man. If you truly care about whites, denounce Israel and show videos of the White House of butchering of Palestinians. I mean, go down here. So if you really want to talk about the numbers, that's the number of how many South African attacks. It's 552 people. That was at the peak in 2019. Well, it's 50% of that, Britt, okay? So to talk about quote unquote genocide of South African farmers, it's like, what are you doing? This is like propaganda as bad as it gets. And if Trump cared so much about them, what the fuck did he do in 2019? He was in power then. Okay. Frank Stevens said, you said your job is to create 1,000 Malcolm X's. Most will convert that to mean Malcolm X is witty where we divide. He is against whites and pro-Muslim. How can store the correct information about this change where class is issued at the end of his life? Yeah, well, if you've seen my videos, most will not think that. Most people are not dumb, okay? Most people will come to our videos. When we talk about Malcolm X, we always reference his speech that he gave before he was executed, where he said, ultimately, I believe there will be a clash between the oppressed and those who do the oppressing and will not be based on the color of the skin. Malcolm, unfortunately, if he had been alive today, he'd be part of our movement. He was starting to understand these concepts, and that's why he was taken out. I think look, let me tell you something. You have to actually ask yourself why a certain set of the population has this disdain towards people, our own working people. Working people work for a living are not dumb. They do study things quite carefully. So you got to start having reverence for working people. You're going to see starting next week, I'm going to be doing a series of videos interviewing people in our movement. People work for a living. There are the lumpen proletariat, the people who don't work, live on disability, who scam people, who are on welfare. Yeah, those people are the people that Trump wants to take advantage of. But hardworking people, pretty much everyone on this call here, are not dumb, okay? People actually study stuff. And they're not manipulated as easily as you think. The establishment wants you to think all working people are dumb. They're not dumb. In fact, they're quite smart because they choose not to participate and they're waiting for people like our movement. Andy Bueno says, can you bring it up a perfect example of a bottoms-up movement? It's what's going on in Africa. Can you, for example, are fighting against the French? Can elaborate a little bit on that? I'm not sure if you're asking, Andy, what is an example of a bottoms-up movement? Andy, I don't see him here. Andy, if you can just answer, have you gone through our Truth, Freedom, Health, Warrior Scholar program? If he's here, you can just put it in the chat. Well, first of all, the early 1900s in the United States were one of the most powerful examples of bottoms-up movements. In fact, they were so powerful because of the many concessions that were gained during the time of the new, quote unquote, New Deal, that the elites wanted to make sure that there would never be a bottoms-up movement in the United States. So they unleashed the McCarthy era, branding all those movements as though they were being run out of from Russia, the Red Scare. But throughout the world, throughout the history of humankind, any gains that have come for you, your ancestors have come through these bottoms-up movements. And you just need to do a little bit of historical study to understand these. And it is because of the power of these bottoms-up movements that there's a consistent effort to diminish them, that they don't exist, to create a dystopian and existentialist view of the world, that we're all, you know, individuals, we don't come together, to create doubt in people at a spiritual level, at an emotional level. But if you just do a little bit of study, go through the Warrior Scholar program, you'll see the many, many examples of bottoms-up movements. Even if we've gained basic necessities, they've come from these bottoms-up movements. If you look at, you know, the rise of these bottoms-up movements, the elites monitor them very carefully. They're monitoring the social media very carefully. They watch to see which slogans, which ideas start going viral. Particularly, they watch what our movement does, and then they mimic them using fake, not so obvious establishment people to suffocate those movements. That's why the future is offline. But more importantly, Andy, I would suggest if you're part of the movement, you connect with the local leader, you get involved, and you start communicating with people on the ground, and you'll have a much richer experience of what's going on. Maren Yarborough says, what do you think of a stadium of tens of people calling for the blood of South African farmers? I think, Maren, let me ask you something. Where were you when 97% of the black people in South Africa were being subjugated? I hope you understand that what you're witnessing here is an attempt to rewrite history. If the Native American people of the United States said, hey, we want our land back, would you say that something's wrong with them? The reality is the leaders that are leading those movements many times use the anger of those people not to unite people, but in legitimate concerns of what's going on to them and not discussing the class issues, but to create a new, in this case, a bourgeois elite of the South Africans. But you have to, your question shows a level of, frankly, ignorance to the extent that you're not putting this in context. 97% of the people of South Africa were subjugated for hundreds and hundreds of years. And the level of thinking that Trump, underlying your subtext, is as though Trump cares about the white people in South Africa, which is also not true. In fact, it was British colonialists are the ones who pitted the Boer Afrikaner whites against black Africans who were wanting to unite. So the Afrikaner, the Boers, settlers, and the black Africans were going to unite against the British colonialists. Okay? So there's a rich history here. So understand that if I were, it's like what you're asking is, imagine if the British started throwing, if they had videos, imagine they started showing pictures of the white colonialists tarring and feathering British. Oh my God, can you believe that the colonialists are tarring and feathering the British colonials? Isn't that horrible? Well, you have to look at the history of why people got to that situation. And without that understanding, you would think that this tarring and feathering and the anger was just occurring in some random context that people are just killers. That's not the case. So the history of exploitation has existed for a long time. And I suggest you go do a little bit of reading what occurred in the 80s, 90s throughout South Africa to understand that context. But the anger that you see in that stadium is really coming at the fact that Nelson Mandela and the black bourgeois still have not addressed the fundamental issues of exploitation of black South Africans. And there are significant number of whites in South Africa who are part of the ANC who support the struggle for real liberation and the end of apartheid. So please go understand that. Don't get caught into this nonsense that Trump's showing this video. And the guy who's talking, leading that video, it's not like he's for black South Africans. He's just trying to consolidate his power. But the fundamental economic class issues of South Africa have still not been addressed. I don't know if you've been to South Africa. It's still a ghetto in many, many places. It's massive amount of slums. So we have to understand this is a class issue. The black bourgeois don't care about the black South Africans. Neither do the white elites. Yes. And by the way, Ayad, thank you for putting the Ayad said, I think it's time we call what's happening in Palestine a Holocaust, right? So remember, if Trump is going to invite And by the way, Cyril Ramaphosa, who's the president of South Africa, is a fool himself. He himself is an exploiter. I have no support for him. But Trump had Netanyahu sitting next to him. Why didn't he put up a video of the butchery that's going on in Palestine? Do you understand like how many people were butchered in Palestine since October 7th? And you're talking about 587 white farmers who were attacked in 2019, which was 50% higher than now, and Trump was in power. Why didn't he bring that up? Please, be smart. Don't get lost in this nonsense. Don't be dumb, okay? Trump hates white people. He hates the white working class. That's what this is about. This is about Zionism, which is on its march to create greater Israel, which has committed massive genocide. And to talk about quote unquote genocide of white farmers in South Africa is beyond ludicrous. It's as theatrical as you can get. And if you truly care about white people, then why did you allow 600 billionaires to increase their wealth by $2.3 trillion? And if you truly care about white people and you were in power in 2019, why didn't you speak out against the white farmers' crime that took place on them? By the way, most of that was, you know, petty crime that took place. A very, very small percentage when compared to, I think it was 56 out of 100,000 crime, white people in South Africa, about 82 out of 100,000 on black people when you look at the stats, okay? But all of this is just showmanship, guys. But notice we're not talking about Palestine anymore. We're not talking about the genocide in Palestine. And you have to wonder also about the two unfortunate people, the so-called Israelis, who were apparently shot concomitant to all of this in DC yesterday, right? You have to really ask, okay, what's that all about, okay? And I suggest everyone here, when you get time, go watch The Little Drummer Girl. It's a movie that was done in the 80s by Kostas Gravis, who was a film director. I remember being in 1980, he came to MIT to play his film. And it's a movie that starts off with a woman going into a building and the building blows up, a Jewish woman. And you say, oh my God, these Muslims are blowing up the Jewish people. And as the movie unwinds, you find out it was Mossad which did this to get people angered at Muslims so they could justify the bombing of Palestinian areas. So understand the level of deception. Understand that Mossad's slogan, Mossad, by the way, is the secret service of Israel. Their slogan is, through deception, thou shalt do war. Through deception, thou shalt do war. Don't be a dumb fuck. Please, don't. Wake the fuck up. Trump talking about that he cares for white people. Are you fucking serious? Race is a very powerful way to mobilize people, guys. You just saw what happened in India, okay? Supposedly some radical group went and gunned down a bunch of people in Kashmir and you get all the Hindus riled up against the Muslims, okay? Race is a very powerful way to split the working class. And we have to be very, very wary of that. Do not think the elites care about their own race. They care about power, profit, and control, not about their own race or their own religion, Hindus or Muslims. I don't think Saudi Arabia gives a fuck about the Muslim people. Okay? Do you think MBS cares about the Muslim people? I don't think so. Okay? I haven't seen him send any fighter planes to go fight on behalf of the Palestinian people. Have you? I don't think so. So don't get involved in race, religious war. It is manipulation. So we don't unite. All right, it's 10:32. Nicholas, if there isn't any other questions, I want to encourage people, if you can give them links If you guys can give them links to the tutorial, Systems Health tutorial, give them links how people can get involved in Clean Food Certified, and give them links how people can support the Open Science Institute, and particularly everyone get involved in Truth, Freedom, Health. Go through the course, go through it multiple times. You may want to watch this video again, but it is very, very important that we recognize that racism, religion, manipulating people is a way to divide and rule people, because someone's religion, someone's race, someone's tribe is very deeply emotional. Don't fall for it. It's a big trap. All right. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Nicholas.
Thank you, Dr. Shiva.
Okay. Be well. Thank you.
You too.
Yep.
We have allowed our country to be taken over from within, and the end goal is you will have a homogenized world where we will become slaves, because there is a condition among the elites that really thinks they're better than you, deep down inside them, that you don't deserve the freedoms you have. They don't. This reality is what people need to wake up to, and we need to all unite working people. There's only one movement that can do that. And that is the movement that we started creating here in Massachusetts, the Movement for Truth, Freedom, and Health. Look, I've been a student of politics since I was a four-year-old kid, studying revolutionary movements, left wing, right wing. There's a physics, there's a nuclear science to destroying the establishment. To build a bridge, you need to understand Newton's equation. You need to understand the laws of gravity. You need to understand Poisson's ratio. There is a way to build a revolution. And that's why I put this together. My goal is to train a army of truth, freedom, and health leaders. We don't need followers like social media. We need leaders, but they need training because the educational system does not teach them history, nothing. So in 3 hours, that's what I've started doing. That's the solution. Wow. We got to train people first with understanding what a system is, the dynamics of all systems that affect nature. The second is understanding the interconnection between truth, freedom, and health. Freedom is the ability to move freely, communicate freely, talk freely. Without freedom, you cannot convert ideas, hypothesis into truth, which is science. And without freedom, you can't really get to truth. And without truth, you make up fake problems and fake solutions, which means you destroy our health. And without health, which is the infrastructure of us and our body, you can't fight for freedom. Truth, freedom, health. Third concept is it has to be bottoms up. Working people, people who work uniting. And what the right wing has done is whenever you say working people unite, that must be communist. Meanwhile, they've let the Democrats run unions, which suppress workers, completely corrupt. But when you look at the arc of American history, it's been when working people came up. We need to go local. Every solution I'm coming up with is a part of this movement. We're giving the science, which is the truth, and then we tell people what they can do on the ground. Like with election fraud, you don't need to wait for some lawyer. Our goal is to train people to go local, to go local, to go local, fight locally. Forget lawyers, forget politicians, forget celebrities. You've got to learn politics, and there is a science to it. They lock us down, we should be ready to shut them down. And the fourth part of this principle is the not so obvious establishment. So when you look at a system, there's always something that disturbs you from getting to your goal. Well, the biggest disturbance is the not so obvious establishment, which are those people who claim they're for you on the left and the right. The Al Sharptons who tell black people I'm for you, the Tucker Carlsons. Do you think any true anti-establishment person will ever be on Fox or CNN? I don't think so. They both mislead working people back into the establishment. Without this solid understanding of political physics and theory, you're screwed. You're going to follow on the left wing Bernie Sanders. Oh, he said something. Or Robert Kennedy. Scumbags. Or you're going to follow some right-wing talk show host. They're not going to lead us to liberation. It's us. We're building a bottoms-up movement. And that political physics, it's a nuclear science of change. Bottoms up. We have to organize to understand that there is people who talk a good game and then look at what they actually do, left and right. I'm sorry, Sean Hannity may say some good things, but I don't see the urgency in his voice to get something done. And it can only come when you weaponize yourself with the right knowledge. You need to be able to identify a rat. You know, Christ didn't go after the Romans, right? It was the Pharisees and the Sadducees who screwed him up. His own quote-unquote people. And that's where we're at. So these four concepts I've built into a curriculum where people can go to truthfreedomhealth.com, and it's an educational program. We need to train people in political theory. You need to have physics, and I've created that curriculum. People need to get educated. We need to get educated fast. And within a half an hour, I can teach people 2 years of MIT control systems. I teach people those concepts. Then I apply it. Anyone can understand it. And then you say, oh, I got to build a bottoms up movement. They have to get politically astute, and then they have to go locally and act, not sit there on social media. They have to act locally, defy locally, do civil obedience locally, but with knowledge on how to build a movement. Now, the Senate campaign's expanded to the Movement for Truth, Freedom, and Health, and they can find it on truthfreedomhealth.com, so people can sign in, they can get access to a bunch of videos. If they want to take a course and become a Truth, Freedom, Health leader, I offer a full scholarship there, but we want people to make a commitment that they'll study, that they'll get certified, that they'll go do activities on the ground. So go to truthfreedomhealth.com. Welcome to VA Shiva. VA Shiva is a product of my journey across East and West, science and tradition, ancient and modern, that brings you the science of systems so you can become a force for truth, freedom, health. VA Shiva is a platform of revolutionary education, community building, and weaponry for unleashing local activism. My journey to VA Shiva begins in the chaos of Bombay, where I experienced diverse religions, languages, castes, and in a small village that had no running water, no electricity, where my grandmother, a poor village farmer, practiced Siddha, an ancient system of Indian medicine over 10,000 years old. She observed one's face, the art of Samudrika Lakshanam, to understand a body's unique constitution, allowing her to deliver the right medicine for the right person at the right time. Watching my grandmother heal others, I was inspired to study medicine. But I was also aware of the corrupt caste system of India, which denigrated a human being, where my family were considered low caste untouchables, where one's birth determined one's destiny. The grit and determination of my mother and father led them to get educated and to come to America, a one in a trillion event. Their actions inspired me to work hard and excel. While in ninth grade, I attended New York University in a computer science program, and subsequently, at the age of 14, was given a full-time job as a research fellow at what is now known as Rutgers Medical School in the heart of Newark, New Jersey. There, I investigated the system of sleep using mathematics, computer science, and biology for sudden infant death syndrome. It was there in Newark where I invented email when I was the first to convert every feature of the physical, paper-based inter-office mail system, including inbox, outbox, memo, carbon copy, blind carbon copy, attachments, into its electronic equivalent, a system which I named email, a term that I was the first to coin. On August 30th, 1982, I was awarded the first U.S. copyright for the invention of this system, recognizing me as the inventor of email. At that time, copyright was the only way to protect software inventions. I went on to MIT, where I earned 4 degrees across multiple systems of engineering, electrical, mechanical, design, biological. That training led me to invent many other systems for advancing humankind. Echomail, the world's first intelligent email management system. Cytosol, a computational biology system for eliminating animal testing to discover new medicines faster, cheaper, and safer. And to the creation of a whole systems methodology for certifying clean food. These innovations led me back on a Fulbright to India, where I discovered the missing link between Eastern medicine and Western systems theory, honoring my grandmother, to develop Your Body, Your System, a powerful tool that will help you understand how your body is a system and how the inputs of food, supplements, and exercise bring your body back to its natural system state. And Systems Health, an integrative educational discipline that is now integrated into the VA Shiva platform that will enable you to learn the science of systems, the science of everything, be it your body as a system or our society and politics as a system, to reveal the foundational interrelationships between truth, freedom, health. Now is the time for you to be the light, learn the science of systems, build community, and weaponize yourself to unleash the activism necessary to deliver truth, freedom, health in your local community. Welcome to VA Shiva.